Welcome to the show where the magic unfolds. Technology and art, a story yet untold. From Lagos to Nairobi, Accra to Johannesburg, we're vibing to the beat. Let the rhythm take control. Oh, tech and art come together, we breaking new ground.
Kwaba, this is the Tech Arts and Soul podcast. The song you heard in the background was fully AI generated with a prompt. Brian, what's your thought on it?
Charlie, it's scary. It means that in a few years to come, we might not get Hammer or Appear Tools or all the legends who used to play beats. I know Brian will not agree, but Charlie.
Well,
that's where we're going. It's really scary.
Right.
It's exciting as well.
I think it's interesting. Maybe not in all the positive. It's definitely something that calls all of us to think a lot.
Rashida, what do you think about this?
I think, you know, the song sounds great, but I understand why creatives feel a way about that a human kind of from the process. And for those of us in the tech space, we advocate for AI to almost enhance the work that humans are doing, not necessarily replace it. So I definitely think that there should be a happy medium where the human is still involved in that process.
Okay.
But Charlie, the song will survive though.
that's like eating your favorite food. And then after you are done, you will learn that dog meat or something.
It was cooked probably with something you don't like.
You don't like, yeah. Something you're allergic.
It's all you feel about it.
Yeah.
Bit of a deception.
Okay, you are joining us on the Tech Arts and Soul podcast. Today, we are talking about AI in the creative sector. And my guests, our guests are going to be Bright and Rashida. I'll let them introduce themselves and then we'll get rolling. Bright, you go by the name Abonsam Cartoons.
But that's just a part of me.
Is it Abonsam Cartoons that I know or we know?
Maybe. I don't know which one that you...
What is
that? It just literally will translate
the devil's cut. Okay.
When I was a young student,
okay,
I learned about a character called Abos
who
challenged the authority heaven.
Yeah.
Because of that, he and his cohorts were cast out of heaven into less favorable, just because they wanted to get how power was.
Exactly.
I don't know if that's the Abonsam Cartoons that we...
There's another one, but we'll think this one will help. Okay, and what do you do?
That name came about because I do a bit of political satire,
okay,
and social commentary, and I think that's where the name came from. That's the name of that project that I did. Like I said, it's one part total.
Rashida, what do you do?
Well, I am a AI integration specialist. So I help individuals and corporate teams strategically implement AI solutions into workflow to help improve their processes and enhance the work that they're already doing.
Right. So, Bright, I first interacted with your art at Charlie Wote. Provocative. One, because I hadn't seen anybody do something like that before. Are there any tools that you employ in your work that you want to speak to? And are you adding AI to that?
I learned to paint and draw traditionally.
Okay.
So sometime along the line, I got introduced to painting digital. And so I believe there is a certain level G in my art practice right now.
Okay.
But it's maybe not at the level where folks are generating pictures or music or in other arts products, generating whole parts of it,
like the song
that we heard. But you know, there has always been a way that, like Rashida said, some kind of computer technology is used to enhance artists' production. And maybe those are the levels at which my use of computer and other computers so far. But I'm still very much interested. There is a certain soul in, I think it's important for art to be art.
And have soul. Great. Rashida, you're an AI integration specialist. I take it that you use AI tools. Which ones are you using currently? And what do you think about completely putting AI in our work? Let's take over what we do.
So I use a lot of different AI tools. In the context of creativity, for instance, I love Midjourney. I think it's one of the best image creating tools out there, like generative AI solutions. I use things like Kodi, which is similar to ChatGPT, but I can train it on documents. So if I'm working, let's say, for the Goethe Institute, and I want to have specific documentation that you guys have about, you know, German policies, mandates, I can train the AI on that and then ask it questions like I would ChatGPT, but it would always reference that data. So I use a lot of those things. When it comes to replacing humans, I don't think AI is 100% there yet. Even if something like Midjourney, it still needs a very high level prompt to deliver a very high quality image. I can't just say, you know, a woman in dreadlocks at the beach. Sure, it's going to give me something, but if I have something in mind specifically that I'm looking for, I need to go in, I need to find, really detail the scenery. I can say what type of camera lens that I want it to look like. I can say what size do I want, mid shot, high shot, wide shot. So there's a lot that a professional still needs to be behind. So I think that definitely it's not there yet, but we are getting close. And obviously the tools that are made available to the public are not necessarily the tools that are in existence. We know that some of these solutions have been in the back years before they've been made public. So I definitely empathize and sympathize with creatives when they feel like as though their work and they themselves can be taken away.
Okay. So you talk about integration a lot. How has the adoption of integration been? You have worked with corporates and individuals. How do you perceive the adoption of integration of AI, their spaces?
They love it. I think every sector that I've worked with, be it the financial sector, public sector, even just individual entrepreneurs that call me and say, Rashida, can you do AI do this for me? And I'll give them something that can. I think a lot of people need help. I think a lot of people want to do better work, want their work to be easier for them. And so adoption and integration is not a problem whatsoever. I think there's just a gap in learning how to use these tools effectively. And that's where we're hoping myself and company kind of come in and bridge that gap for people.
You talk about the gap in learning. Are we put enough effort to close that gap for people to learn more about AI, or we are still far off?
So when you say we, are you talking like an African context?
Like in Africa, in the African context.
Yes, I think there is a bit of a gap, but it's to no fault of their own, or to our own rather, sorry. It's because this space is moving so fast. Even for those of us in this space, every day there's a new AI tool. It's almost impossible to keep up. I've had to allocate, you know, 1 to 2 hours a day to learning. And not everyone has that time. And not everyone even knows where to even begin to learn how to have these tools. So I think the space is moving too fast and everyone is inevitably going to be behind. But I think that those who are very eager to improve themselves are doing the work that's necessary to get.
Charlie Bryan, what do you think of an artist who uses AI entirely to generate what they are doing? What do you think about it?
I'll start by the song Ringtone, a remix.
Okay.
And on the song, Tiny had to remind people that this was a song. Milalani,
Milalani, yeah.
Just to say that you absolutely forgot about me whilst you were introducing people all of a project. Anyway, now, artists who use entirely AI, it's a thing now. And there's a lot of debate on whether we should accept those kind of artists. So there's an artist called Alvry Jones, right? He, if you follow his Instagram page, so many followers, he creates first with AI and then finishes with digital art, right? And people are now criticizing him. He came out to say that he came out to openly talk about his processes, and people are now criticizing for deception because the quality of his work was so good. People thought that he was that technically good, right? And another good example to illustrate the debates in the art and tech space, last year, the Sony Photography Awards, there was an artist that won, and then later on, revealed his secret. He used entirely AI to create. It was so good that he won the Sony Photography Award. And before he said he was doing an experiment to let people know the cutting edge of AI and photography. So there's this debate whether it's cool, it's acceptable, or my opinion is that AI tools, I see it more of an assistive tool. Just like how the Microsoft tools have assisted in administrative work, right? So we need to begin to start accepting that processes can be enhanced using AI and it could be finished with digital art. Again, you need to be very artistic to write the right kind of prompts to get the right kind of output you're looking for. You need to have an imagination of some kind of art you want to write the right prompt. So that debate is going to continue. By my opinion, I think we need to start creating space for the AI artists and accepting it. But I'm sure along the conversation, one of the other things we need to be thinking of is if somebody generates with AI and ends with personal human touch, who owns the art? Should it be labeled? There are a lot of ethical questions that I'm sure we'll discuss along the line. But my opinion is that it's here. We need to create space for it and see how they can work hand in hand. Yeah.
Right. Right. You talk about soul a lot. What do you think about artists who use AI or employ the help of AI in their art?
So to piggyback off of Brian's initial submission, maybe the case of the Sony Photography Awards is something that is a bit far away. Just a week ago, it happened in Ghana too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I was shortlisted for an art award, and eventually the person who was awarded in that category is someone whose work is generated AI. I thought I would make a case, but then, you know, I also thought, you know, I wasn't ready for anyone to call me a sore loser. But
it's interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting for me, but not in a very good way. And I thought, wow, do these adjudicators really know what they're about? You know, is it a popularity contest? Are they looking for something that just looks beautiful, or they are really interested in the technical capabilities of the artists who are claiming authorship of the works that were submitted to be awarded? Yeah, so I didn't make my case yet. Maybe later when I have the time, I'm going to. Not because I'm sore about not receiving it, but just because I think these things need to be looked at critically. Brian mentioned who owns the work. If you know the AI, you know, tools, do not create the work. It picks pieces, elements, styles, colors, technique, look, feel, strokes, you know, think of all the elements in a design. It picks all these from existing artists and their works. And then those artists are neither compensated or even credited. You know, so how would you feel as an artist if you spent your whole lifetime developing your skill and literally developing a technique that is known as your technique, and then someone uses 5 minutes to just lift off of that, and you know they are claiming to be an so all these ethical considerations have to come in. Personally, I just think art should have soul. If art is a human activity, it should have soul.
Yeah.
And by soul, I don't even mean like technical proficiency, but you know, to be an artist, it's so many things, but it also means to be vulnerable, to be, to feel. All these human elements pour into a piece of art. And for me, that is what makes that art valuable in the context of art history. An artwork is supposed to
evoke something.
Evoke a certain feeling that I don't think machines understand.
No. Maybe they may.
Because we've seen machines mimic human intelligence quite well. Maybe in the future, machines would understand human feeling and be able to interpret this into creating art. But now, as of now, I don't see it yet. And for us to easily adopt AI-generated images or other kinds of art in art space,
herald it.
We need to look at these ethical considerations.
Yeah, but what I would like to just find out from your perspective, if somebody's buying arts, since you sell arts, are they buying the final products or they are buying the process or both from selling arts?
So there are different ways of selling art.
Okay.
Art is not like a pair of jeans that you just see and buy on the side. I think in the best examples, when you buy art, you're literally buying a piece of the artist. So there is more to it than just final piece, a picture or a carving or a song. When you buy art, you're buying all the time the artist has used to perfect the ability to create that object. So I think there is more that an art buyer, you know, gets from an artwork than just the final piece that you look at.
But from a consumer point of view, I'm talking from more of the artist point of view. So from the consumer point of view, I may not be privy to a lot of the process, the emotions poured into it. It's the new final music I'm listening to or final piece of art I'm looking at. And I think, oh, this looks nice. Not a very sophisticated art buyer, but a regular user, this art looks really nice. I think I want to purchase this. And I'm asking this question because if AI can assist your process and enable you to produce a bit more faster, wouldn't it be a plus so you can put out more art? So part of it will be outsourced to the AI whilst you do the finish. That is, so you can bring out more for the economic point of view.
But has the question ever been about art consumption, about quantity?
Quality. The quantity is in terms of revenue for the artist, right?
And as I wanted to actually ask about Bright's creative journey and what inspires your art, so that it gives us perspective into when you say an artist's soul and the amount of hours they put in into the art, at least that gives us a view of what goes into making a painting or an artwork.
Yeah, I, again, like Rashida, it should be more about the quality than the quantity
that comes out again.
Everywhere, when you see someone make something and they are only interested in quantity and numbers, you see the quality, it goes down. It's a very basic thing you find anywhere. It doesn't even have to be art. It can be food. When you make food for five people, pour in a lot of care.
Like jollof.
Food, if you make jollof for 1,000 people, you're not really interested. It will be hard for you to give it that level of care and attention as you would give something that you do intimately. And for me personally, I appreciate the art that has that intimacy and has that soul, being music. You asked about my process.
Yes, your process.
My journey and my process. So I've always loved drawing since child. And I realized there was something that I got better at the more I did it.
Okay.
And somewhere later, then I decided I wanted to make art.
Livelihood out of it.
Yeah, to live an art life, well, an art life.
Okay.
And so I want art to be my everything, to be my occupation, be the way I navigate the world, how I communicate. And I had the privilege to go to school and learn more about art history. Doing that broadens your perspective so that you don't assume that everything is in that small bubble that you're in. And over the years, I think all that studying has improved that. Not just the technical skill, but also the
perception
and the concepts, ideas. Well, those are the things that influence sometimes quality that your artwork would have. And again, quality will not be just the final outlook or the final piece. The thoughts that goes into it. It's one of the ways that you can differentiate between the work of one artist. You see someone whose work is really layered with meaning, context, as against another one that is just, I don't want to say doing. You can tell when you see an artist who has poured a lot into their work, you can tell. And that it comes from learning, because you need to fill yourself up so that you can.
I ask about that because I also want to ask you, if anywhere into the future, do you see yourself involving AI in your creative process? The thought of it, or like generating a prompt and saying, I have an idea to draw this. Can you give me options on what to try?
I think that is a very fundamental part of the art conception process, and it is where the artist is most needed. I think at that stage where you are trying to carve out the idea, that is actually where you need the artist to have their vision poured in, not just definition. So to think of having a machine do that on my behalf, I don't know. Personally, I don't think it is something that I would like to do. Maybe in the future, I may experiment with it. Like I said, there is already an element of computer technology in the art making process, but it's at a level where I think it's very ethical, because that is also very important to me, so that you are not unfairly taking advantage of another artist's creation and not having them be compensated.
I'm glad that you brought the ethics conversation. And Rashida, so who owns the money? Who has the art? AI is learning from other artists. So what's the ethics behind all of this? How are we protecting people like Bright and their work?
You know, unfortunately, I don't think that there are systems in place right now to protect artists. I think once your work is out there on the internet, it's out there for consumption, for replication, for anyone can take your art and copy it and sell it. You're not even trying to just fight AI. There's so many other battles that you have to fight as an artist and protecting your craft. So I think that it's the responsibility of the governments to put parameters. So when these large tech companies are building AI models, that they're held responsible for what type of data they're using. I mean, even if we take a look at large language models like ChatGPT or Gemini, which was formerly Bard, or even Anthropic, they're using data from the internet and from all corners of the internet to train these large language models. And as we know, if you've been on the internet for even 5 minutes, you know that there's some interesting viewpoints on there. And for communities like us in Africa, where a large portion of our community and our people are not on the internet, that means we are greatly disproportionately underrepresented in the development of these models. So the only people that can call these tech companies into order is the government, is the communities that they're serving. For instance, the Ghanaian government says, hey, if you want to use African art, let's say they created African Art Consortium, all African artists, you give your permission that your art is included in this data set that is then used to train these models, then you're compensated anytime a large tech company wants to use that data set to build AI models. So those are some of the things that can be in place, as well as even our language. I mean, think about how many of us communicate online in Tri and Hausa and Ewe Dagbani. That is then used for these large tech companies to build these language models using our language. But those of us who have made the effort of creating content in indigenous African languages, we're not compensated for that work. All right. So it's important that our government realizes that and puts parameters before these things are deployed upon us.
Okay.
I'm smiling because I know I'm smiling for the policy.
Is it a necessary evil rather for your content to be used to train these models and to be better represented? It will also mean surrendering a large part of yourself, you know, which I don't think people really want to do. So I was having this conversation with one of my professors only recently, and that was what he also thought, that we need to be represented because it's the future. You can't stay outside of the future. That's true, will be written.
Exactly.
But to do it will also mean that you have to surrender a lot of your privacy so that these companies or tech companies can use these to also create for you to. So that thing also becomes an issue. I know a few years ago, some of my colleagues would go to the university and language, and then there were certain jobs that you could do once you had studied maybe Spanish or German. But now, you know, at least when it comes to basic translation, all those opportunities that humans would have had have been wiped out. You can just take your phone and in 2 seconds, you can translate whatever foreign language that you don't speak. AI, and you understand. It's very convenient for all of us to use. And we don't necessarily think about how this wipes out a whole industry that have employed people like you and I. You need to look at how, at least use the language example. As an artist, I use the language example. I know corporations often operate on the let's cut costs model. You want to put in the least, make the most out of it. And if you have to work with human artists, who would take months to turn work in, and then you can get that same work perhaps in that same artist style in 5 minutes and not necessarily compensate. Everybody will choose the easier option.
And do you feel threatened because you have used the language comparison as an artist?
That's our threatened. I don't Interestingly, I don't.
Made by your colleagues.
Maybe it's because I also paint traditionally.
Okay.
I've seen some machines try to use traditional mediums to paint and all that, but I don't feel threatened because the kind of visions that I have, I don't know if any machine can have the same. And even in art, a lot of the success of artists thrives on these visions. So there's always that thing that maybe in the next 100 or 200 years, machines will replace, but presently, I don't think it happens.
And do any of your colleagues feel threatened as well? You've been talking to, I mean, you have a community that you, has it ever come across in a discussion where people feel like, oh, AI will take?
Oh, I know artists who have, for example, she mentioned me, have embraced Midjourney. And now they would not even make sketches. And the process used to be to compose a good picture, think of it, make multiple sketches, sometimes work with live models, do photo shoots, draw and paint from these photos. It was a tedious process, but that is what gives the art value. So when you acquire a piece of art, you know, it's a whole backroom staff that I've worked, collaborated to create that thing that you are enjoying. And these same artists now will just go on Midjourney and, you know, use a prompt to generate something very quickly. And you see those images and you can immediately tell that they are devoid of a certain human soul.
But what if they use Midjourney to generate the ideas and then they pick that and now create the drawing? So they are just taking a part of their journey, making the process shorter.
With the way these models have been trained so far, sure. Right? If you run a test, right, you see that a lot of the images you get are generic.
Yeah.
They either look the same or have very, very similar elements in them. Maybe because there haven't been a lot of examples used to train the model so that it's diverse enough. But again, it's not about the final product.
The process for
you. The process. And for the trained eye or trained consumer, when you see the image, you can tell.
There's this, talking about whether people have been threatened, I've been observing the cover arts, a lot of our music shirts.
Shatawale.
There's not do artists like that.
No, it's Shatawale. He used it for his singles.
Exactly. And it's yes. Like a trend now. So the graphic designer who either people have been paid by Shatawale for putting together, his job is being taken away. So I think it's there's some little threat there for not the high-end traditional art yet, but for graphic design. It may not look as original as possible, but there are some consumers who don't really pay attention to all of the things you're explaining. They just want a nice cover art. So that's...
For some, it's unfortunate.
Yeah.
But for some of these artists who should be the forerunners of the industry, I think it's unfortunate that they do.
Okay.
Like I mentioned earlier, we live in a society where people would want the maximum results with the least input. So if they had to pay a human artist X amount of money to make work for them and they can literally use an app that they would sign on for less the fee and still be able to have their... Obviously, they're going to go for that. I've worked with some of these artists before and you can immediately tell they are of the character that they wouldn't even have wanted to pay human artists the right fees to have them collaborate.
I side with you because I feel that especially for an album art, it goes beyond the painting. I speak from the perspective of My Beautiful Dark Fantasy, Kanye West's album, where he had different album arts made by an artist. Now, if you are a fan, that's a keepsake. So it goes beyond just the art of just putting it on a, slapping it on an album cover, but it has an emotional attachment to the album. It's one of the best albums, and you want to have an artwork that So I think that I side with you.
But you guys are the fans make up just about 10% of the market.
No, but
the true fans.
Yeah, but true fans making 10% of the market doesn't mean the core fans. Remember, when all goes down, it's the people who will come to your shows, who will pay top dollar to come to your shows. They're people who would stand in an argument and fight for you. So I think that the album art part goes beyond that. Of course, yes, they are using it, but I think I side with Bright on the fact that it has to have something.
Maybe you have some of the machines listen to your music and come to.
they can strip for you, man.
it's unfortunate.
Yes, and also another reason is because people want to keep things. Like now, people are going back to their gramophone disc and buying
vinyl.
And vinyl, yes, vinyl. People buying vinyl because they want to keep it. So I side that art has to have soul. Rashida, you are an AI integration specialist, and so all this information coming into the artificial intelligence space, how are we tagging it? Or do you think that we should tag it so that people can identify what's AI generated and what's not AI generated?
I believe absolutely that especially a lot of the art should be tagged, and even in the writing, it's obvious. I mean, I got an email from this young man in Ghana, and the language he was using, I said, it's devoid.
He was delving.
Yeah, the beacon of hope. And I said, please, like, where did you hear this? You know, like, even those who English is their native language, we don't speak like that. So you can already tell it's devoid of character. You know, even for me, because a lot of the time I do use AI to assist me in my writing, especially with my contracts or things that I do. I went back and I read something that I had done years ago, and I could feel the essence of a human behind that writing. And it was a wake-up call to me that I've lost that voice, my own voice in the writing that I do. Because now AI is integrated into my email. AI is integrated into everything, any sort of form of communication. And so I think a lot of people are going to automatically know. I think when they talk to you once, and then they hear how you write. That's what I use. So I do believe tagging it is important. And I really do believe that people are always going to prioritize the human touch. I mean, think about when chatbots came out for customer service. If you wanted to talk to, you know, like, let's say I want to talk to my bank.
Yeah.
There's a customer service chatbot. How many people say, talk to a human, please? I want to talk to a human, please. Because it's just devoid of that actual care, that actual conversation. And I think that's the same thing that's going to happen with art and creativeness. I want to talk to a human. And you were talking about quantity. Yes, if you're thinking of mass producing t-shirts with Ghana emblems, yeah, use AI. But that's going to be a $5, $10 t-shirt. When I am going to spend $200, $300 on a piece of clothing, that's I'm going to want something that's woven, hand woven by artisans. I want something that's taken time, because I value money, and I know, okay, my time is worth, let's say, $20 an hour. And I know that it took you 5 minutes to make this shirt. Why am I paying $200? Right? So if you even understand the value of money in that aspect, you're not going to spend. So people who are adamant on using AI for everything that they do, especially in the creative sense, their work is going to be incredibly devalued. No one's going to want to pay that much. I mean, you said you are a painter. I would pay top dollar knowing that you took hours, you used different mediums, than if the exact same image was printed on a screen. I would pay.
I think that's already how the value system adds it. Right? Something that was hand-painted centuries ago,
yes,
is still way much more valuable than something that was made.
Quickly,
human hand touch. The point I want to draw your attention to is that the AI systems are getting so better that it's very difficult to differentiate what is done with AI and what is art. You, the technical people, may be able to see, but the consumer who is the everyday consumer who want to interact with this art may not tell a difference. If judges of a photography award scheme and the example you give could be so misled, then think of the everyday people and think of how this whole, by time it gets better. So that's the blurry line that we need to put into consideration. And the other thing is that I appreciate when you say you pay $200 for, and Bryce, please take the check after. Yeah. But when you look at the economy of skill, and there are more people in the $10 category than you, right? So for an artist, especially in our context, right, how many people can pay $200 or $500 for something you make? But a lot more people. Are you interacting in the market?
No, there is okay. Actually a system designed already on that model.
Okay.
So for example, again, referencing my practice, sometimes painters make prints, original painted.
Yeah.
And so the prints have a certain entry-level fee that someone can pay to them. Yeah. And then the original piece itself. But artist always has to tag. So, you know, this is print. Maybe this is print number 2 out of 1,000 prints.
Okay.
So the value will be pegged at certain number. And then this is the original piece in oil or original piece in watercolor. And, you know, it's tagged at a certain price. So the person who is a connoisseur, who knows their stuff,
yeah,
knows what they will go for. So there is always a way to serve, you know, all the different tastes, different value distinction.
Yeah, it's about knowing your market as well, right? You can definitely target art to a market that understands and values art. And people, there's art collectors, art historians, universities that they value that. And so those are the people that you want.
How developed is that market in Ghana?
Oh, in Ghana, well, not quite. But, you know, the fact that it is not there does not.
It won't get there.
It's potentially. Now, presently, you have Ghanaian artists breaking into the global stage and doing equally as well as any artist from anywhere. Now, being from Ghana or being from Africa is not the disadvantage that it used to be. Tiny is an advantage, you know. So nothing stops you from going to play in the art market in China or any other art center in the world. So, you know, we try to use the experience from all these centers to come and develop a local one that works well for us. Maybe the art market will be different, obviously, because there's different levels of economy, money value, and all that. Definitely, we can create a model that works for us so that artists can be valuable and relevant to local setting as much as anywhere else in the world.
Yeah, and even I lived in Brazil for several years. And if you go to in Salvador Bahia, you go to the market there, the town square. You know the paintings. I don't know the style, but you know where they have like, I think it's oil paintings. Usually it's depiction of women, kind of in stick figures, right? Those paintings go for 3, 4, 5 times the amount that you can buy it here in Accra. Seriously, they go for like upwards of $100. Something here that's maybe 400 cities, 300 cities, right? So it shows that there's a global market for authentic African art. Yeah. And sometimes you're not appreciated at home. And you have to step outside to be appreciated. And so I think what you said is great, that Ghanaian artists are entering into huge other markets and doing so well.
I love that everybody's talking about money. And Rashida, are we going to see a value system created for artists to gain revenue from their artwork being used by training AI models, and then also whoever is using them or whoever is incorporating them in their creative journey? Will we see something like that in the future?
Inshallah. You know, inshallah, I think that there can be a system in place. There are ways that you can, I mean, for instance, Google, when it started to use African languages, use the Jehovah Witnesses, it's called the JD 500. And the Jehovah Witnesses converted or translated the Bible into 500 different languages. And that was the foundational data set that they used to build Google Translate. And so obviously Jehovah's Witnesses were paid for that data. So I think sometimes maybe we shouldn't wait for the government to set these things up. Artists should come together, create a data set of art that they're not putting out into the public, that they're not releasing, that they're only going to use specifically for the basis of training these AI models. So sometimes we have to be our own leaders and we have to take that initiative before, you know, bigger entities start to take notice. But there is a system in place that artists can start to monetize their art. Absolutely.
I love that you mentioned the government. And Bright, what's your relationship as an art collective with regulatory bodies now in Ghana?
So it's very fantastic because it's a huge demand to want these things to be suddenly checked when it comes to AI, when in the past it hasn't been checked already in our everyday non-AI life. You know, when you think about how musicians have complained about royalties over the years, and even up to now, it hasn't been sorted.
Yeah.
When there are supposed to be regulatory bodies that should check out. I think whatever we do in the digital space is a huge reflection of what more traditional spaces. If we are able to check it in the traditional, definitely see the relevance in checking it in the digital spaces as well. But definitely has to be done. Artists need to be able to live.
And that brings me to, so we talk about arts costing. Rashida mentioned that arts costs 5 times in Brazil than it does in Ghana. And so there's obviously the trajectory of acceptance. You, as an artist, I see you do a lot of advocacy with your art. How is the reception?
For the advocacy or the activism, you know, the reception, it's been very positive. In the end, although all my opinions are very personal ones, I realize they also reflect opinions of other people. So it looks like, oh, we can speak vicariously to these artists and their art practice. And through that, it's very, very positive. But there's always the room for debate, critique, and I think that is also very, very important, at least for the art to be able to grow. So I'm not interested in everybody accepting whatever it is that it creates, but for it to be a channel that encourages some kind of debate, education, even more activism.
Thank you so much for sticking and staying. This has been the Tech Arts and Soul podcast. I have done this with Brian, Rashida, and Bright. Find us on all your podcast platforms. Subscribe, leave us a review, and share. It's the best thing that you can do for us. Catch you on the next episode. Thank you and bye-bye. Oh, tech and art, come together. We breaking new ground.